Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Sadie's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Yes, I admit I've got a thinking problem. She's always on my mind. Her memory goes round and round. I've tried to quit a thousand times.
Hour two of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio on National South Carolina Day. So we've been playing music all afternoon of musicians from the state. Who's this one?
This is David Ball, who is originally from Spartanburg.
Ah.
He also had a big hit in the months after 9/11/01 with the song Riding with Private Malone.
Interesting. And did you say this one was requested?
Yes, it was.
Oh, came out on the request line. All right.
And it is on a playlist for our Classic Country station.
Oh, perfect. We'll be playing more South Carolina musicians throughout the afternoon from National South Carolina Day. Plenty of quarterback news today, not only the Gamecocks starting quarterback, but Cam Newton being released in New England. And we had Mark Schofield, our next guest, who's going to join us in just a moment. We had him scheduled before this news because Mark is one that we love to rely upon when it comes to breaking down quarterbacks. We were talking rookie quarterbacks yesterday, so to get into all of that stuff, Mark is now joining us. You can find him on Twitter at Mark Schofield. He writes for the NFL Wire. You can watch his instructional videos and breakdowns on YouTube. Follow him on Twitter at Mark Schofield. He's with us now. Mark, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, Luke. Great to be with you. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of quarterback news today. Excited to dive into it and excited to have football back.
Yeah, you and me both. So let's get started. And before we circle back to the Cam Newton stuff, I do want to go through the rookie quarterbacks because that's what a lot of the excitement has been around. And, well, really, that was the genesis of that decision made in New England today with Mac Jones. So let's start with these rookie quarterbacks and what you've seen from them so far in preseason, as maybe difficult as it can be to break down some of that tape. But I do want to start with Trevor Lawrence. Played here at Clemson. People were concerned about the offensive line. We were talking, some pundits were saying, oh, you should bench him for Gardner Minshew. As you watch Trevor Lawrence break into the NFL this preseason, are you any less concerned about him as an NFL quarterback now than at any point in the past few months?
I mean, I think, Luke, after their third preseason game, the one we just saw this past weekend, I'm a little bit less concerned about him. I was a little worried watching those first two preseason games in terms of the concepts they were running with Trevor Lawrence. A lot of vertical concepts with late breaking routes from receivers. And when you have an offensive line that is struggling to protect a quarterback, that's not really the best combination. This past weekend, you saw a little bit more quick game stuff, a little bit more stuff designed to get the ball out of Trevor's hands quickly in the down. That's a good way to sort of protect your young quarterback. And so I feel a little bit better about the situation he's in right now, Luke, than I did say a week ago, 2 weeks ago. But generally speaking, I'm not worried about Trevor Lawrence. I still think that when you watch him play, even on those route concepts where the routes are breaking deeper downfield, he has to hold on to the ball a bit longer, you still see the traits that made him the first overall pick in my top quarterback last draft cycle. From the mechanics to the decision-making to the footwork, he's teaching tape as a quarterback goes. He's somebody that, if I'm a coach in high school kids, I say, look, you want to learn how to throw the football? This is a guy to watch. And so I think the situation has improved over what we saw last week in the third preseason game. But generally speaking, I'm not too worried about Trevor Lawrence. There was a reason he was the first overall selection in this draft. He's an extremely talented quarterback. He has the traits you want at the position. And I think once they figure out how to protect him and get route concepts that work for him in that offense, he's going to be just fine.
Of all these rookie quarterbacks, and again, when you watch these preseason games, you have to take it with a grain of salt because of who they're going up against, and maybe the offense isn't the normal offense you'll see in the regular season. But of all the rookies this summer, who did impress you the most? Who stood out to you the most these last couple of weeks?
You know, it's interesting, Luke. All five of them have looked really good this preseason, but I think the player that sort of stood out to me the most, at least in the preseason games themselves, was Zach Wilson with the Jets. He's somebody that when you saw him at BYU, you saw the leap forward he took from his sophomore year to his junior year. You know, there's a reason he rose up draft boards in a hurry. But then, you know, as training camp began, Luke, we heard the stories. He's throwing a lot of interceptions. He's making mistakes. And he had a wonderful answer about how preseason and practice and training camp is the time to figure out what he can and cannot do as a quarterback, the kinds of throws he can get away with and the kinds of throws he can't get away with. And it seems like he's learned that because you saw him against the Giants in limited action. You saw him against the Packers, a bit more action, a couple more drives in that game. But he's running the offense well. He was making good reads, good decisions. Certainly has athleticism, certainly has arm talent. And so while all five of these young quarterbacks, I think, have shown they can be top-level starters in the NFL, Zach Wilson is the one out of the five that, for me at least, has impressed me the most.
Yeah, he impressed me the most as well. My expectations weren't too high, and he's looked good this preseason. As we talked with Mark Schofield on Twitter, at Mark Schofield, talking NFL quarterbacks. All right, let's get back to that Cam Newton news. You're close to that Patriots organization there. Cam Newton released today, Mac Jones the starter. In your opinion, was this the right move to make today for New England heading into the season?
You know, I do think, Luke, that this was the right move right now. I'm still a little bit surprised by it. I still, as of yesterday, thought, okay, Cam Newton will probably be their week one starter. It's just a question of when Mac Jones takes over. Mac Jones has certainly looked better than maybe people expected he would look this preseason, similar to the Zach Wilson discussion we just had. You see him against Washington. You see him against the Eagles. You see him this past weekend on Sunday against the Giants, and he's running their offense efficiently. He's using his eyes well to move defenders or freeze defenders. He's putting the ball where it needs to be on throws. He's doing the things in that Patriots offense that Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels typically value at the position, right? The decision-making, the quick release, the ball placement, those were all things that they structure their offense around, looking for that, you know, critical yardage after the catch and yardage after the catch opportunities. That's Mac Jones. That's his game. That's not really Cam Newton's game. He's more of a downfield, vertical, almost a violent type passer. And so I think what it came down to was they had an opportunity to move forward with the young quarterback that he drafted in the first round that showed you that, look, I can handle this job. I can run this offense. We've all seen teams move into that rookie quarterback under that rookie deal, that cost control deal, where you can now say 4 years of a cost-controlled quarterback at the game's most important position. You can build around them. That's a very good position to be in for an organization. So Belichick looked at this, saw that Mac Jones could run their offense, saw that he could handle the responsibilities of being an NFL quarterback. And let's not forget, when Cam was sidelined last week because of COVID protocols, Mac Jones got the opportunity on Wednesday to be the starting quarterback, the guy that ran the ones in a joint practice with the Giants. And I think, Luke, we're seeing more and more NFL teams, NFL head coaches, really prioritize those joint practices as the evaluation process of training camp. You're really getting a chance to get into these controlled environments and see what these guys can and cannot do. And I think that opportunity for Jones to step into that, and everybody that was there said he had a phenomenal day, that might have been the sort of last piece to this puzzle where Belichick felt comfortable moving on from Cam and going into the season with Mac Jones as his starter.
Do you think there is a future job or role for Cam Newton as a starter in this league here moving forward?
You know, a starter, it's hard to figure out. Anytime a player of Cam Newton's ability and pedigree is released, you start wondering, okay, well, where is he going to end up? You know, you've heard people mention perhaps the Denver Broncos, right? But they've got Teddy Bridgewater, Drew Locke. Are those guys really the answer? They've named Teddy Bridgewater the starter, but would Cam Newton be an upgrade there? You've also heard Dallas is interested, but that would be as a backup, obviously, to Dak Prescott, who's been dealing with some injury issues. You know, you have to wonder, though, what does Cam have left? I mean, he went into this season saying that he was fully healthy for the first time. People were hopeful what we'd see, maybe not the 2015 version of Cam, but maybe that, you know, 2017 version of Cam, where he sort of willed the Panthers into the playoffs. People were hoping that maybe we'd see that player again. Maybe we don't. You know, maybe that player, you know, is just in the rearview mirror now, and the best opportunities that Cam will have is as a backup in this league. He could still offer something as a backup. You know, he could still be somebody that could step in and play well for a game or two if called upon. But that's a decision that he's going to probably have to make. I'm sure most teams are settled at the starter position now. You know, and so he might have to go and, you know, swallow his pride a bit and accept a backup role if he wants to play this season. Or maybe he sits and waits. Maybe he waits and sees if there's an injury that pops up and he can get signed. You know, if a quarterback goes down, he might be a better option than some of the current backups. And so maybe he doesn't want to tie himself to an organization just yet. But as a starter, at least right now, given the timing of this, it's hard to see him stepping into a starting role, at least right now.
Talking quarterbacks with Mark Schofield on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Let me ask about the two other rookie quarterbacks we haven't gotten to yet. Justin Fields. I was not as high from what I saw this preseason on Justin Fields as apparently most were throughout the country. When you look at the Bears and what you saw from Justin Fields this preseason, when it comes to week one, would you roll with Andy Dalton or Justin Fields?
Yeah, I think until you put in that week one qualifier, Luke, I was going to answer this question one way. But when you add that week one qualifier, it sort of changes things. Because as good as Fields has looked, the athleticism, the arm talent, and all of that, I think there's an aspect to his game that is still being figured out, and that's sorting out the pass protection parts of the job, right? And we've all seen that moment from the second preseason game where they had an empty formation, five-man offensive line-only protection system, and he got absolutely ear-holed by a linebacker coming off the edge because they didn't fix the protection pre-snap. And a lot of people much smarter than me, whether it's a Dan Orlovsky, whether it's a Jeff Schwartz, whether it's a Tim Jenkins, other people that study and analyze and talk about this game have said, you've got to sort that out before the play begins as a quarterback, as an offensive line. If Fields is sort of struggling in that realm to sort out protections pre-snap, on the road week one against Aaron Donald is probably not the best environment for your debut. So if Matt Nagy isn't comfortable with Fields in that setting, in that environment, sorting out protection schemes at this point, then maybe week one isn't the best time to start him. I do think overall he is the better quarterback than Andy Dalton, and I think he should be starting games sooner rather than later. But if the organization is not comfortable with Fields when he gets to that line of scrimmage and he's trying to figure out blitz looks and how to adjust protection accordingly, then week one against those Rams is probably not the place to make his debut.
Let me ask you about a couple of last quarterbacks before we let you go. Jordan Love, he went from the side of a milk carton to actually on the field. We actually got to see him this preseason. From what you saw, from what you know about him, even go back to his college days, do you think Jordan Love, with maybe a little more coaching, could he be a realistic franchise type of quarterback for the Packers replacing Aaron Rodgers, say, as soon as after this season?
Yeah, it's a great question, Luke. And he's somebody that I was not high on in that draft class coming out. I thought he needed a lot of work and development. But from what I saw, particularly this past weekend against the Bills, you know, he's learning some of the lessons that he needs to learn. He's learning how to sync up his eyes and his footwork in the pocket, which is something that wasn't quite developed coming out of Utah State. He certainly has the arm talent, but he's starting to figure out how to sort of layer in throws and throw with a little bit more touch, not always relying on the fastball. There's still some things he has to sort out. There's still some things that he has to learn. I don't think he's there yet. But I do think that I'm a bit more comfortable and confident that he can be that kind of franchise quarterback if and when Aaron Rodgers steps away from the Green Bay Packers, whether trade or release or retirement or however that situation plays out next offseason, and Jordan Love can step into that offense and run it and run it well. So I'm a bit more optimistic about Love than I was, say, during his draft cycle. I think the work that he put in last year, the time to sort of sit and learn from LaFleur, from Rodgers, and from what we saw this preseason, I'm more optimistic that he can become that kind of franchise quarterback when he's called upon to lead the Packers.
I've been maybe Sam Darnold's biggest cheerleader this offseason. Do you think Darnold and Carolina could work or will work?
I think it will. I think it will. I loved some of what he did in the last preseason game, whether it was reading coverages pre-snap, reading rotations pre-snap to post-snap. I'm a huge fan of Joe Brady from an offensive play design and play calling perspective. I really like the weapons around him. Obviously, the existing relationship between Darnold and Robbie Anderson could be a big part of their offense. Those are two players that are definitely on the same page. When you watch that touchdown, you know, late in the first half of that game on that little red zone concept where Anderson started inside him and went vertical and Darnold puts it on the back shoulder, that's a relationship and a kind of throw and play that needs to develop over time, but it's already in place between those two. And obviously you have Christian McCaffrey as well, a great offensive weapon. And so I think you piece this all together, and I think that there is a situation where that can certainly work. I'm very optimistic about Sam Darnold sort of reviving his career under Brady with those weapons. And so I'm with you. I think this will work for the Panthers. I'm very excited to see them as the season gets rolling.
We've kept you long, so real quick, and maybe it's Darnold, do you have a breakout quarterback this year? You know, kind of like Josh Allen last year, where somebody we don't see coming, they're going to have a big year.
Yeah, I mean, Darnold could be that player. You know, if he certainly sort of steps into that role with the offensive weapons like we discussed, I certainly think Darnold could be that player. I mean, perhaps, you know, another quarterback to watch, and I know it seems a little weird to say it because he was the first overall pick, Joe Burrow. I mean, he goes down early. Now he's coming back from the ACL injury. They've added some weapons. They've added some offensive line help around him. Now maybe they can protect him, and we can see the Joe Burrow that we're hoping to see when the Bengals drafted him first overall. Another member of his class, Tua Tagovailoa, I think he's poised for a step forward. So some of those young quarterbacks, I think, are in good positions to take a leap in the season ahead.
Great stuff from Mark Schofield on Twitter at Mark Schofield writes for the NFL Wire. Find his videos online at YouTube. Follow him on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Always does a great job breaking down the quarterback position. Mark, appreciate all the time and the insight. Great to have football back. Enjoy the upcoming season.
You too, Luke. Thanks again. Have a great day.
You as well. Appreciate it. Mark Schofield, who we rely on here in the Morrow Midday Show for our quarterback breakdowns. One of a couple of guys. But always love having him on once or twice a year to talk about the quarterbacks. Usually around draft time and around this time of year as we get ready for the season. If you listen to the show, you know I'm a big Sam Darnold guy. Brad on Twitter said, bring Cam Newton back to Carolina. I would say, no thanks. We have moved on. Right? It's like when you end that relationship, and maybe it was a tough thing to do. Maybe they even broke your heart. But you've moved on, and you're with somebody new, and you're happy, and then they come back knocking on your door. No thanks. We have moved on. Right? Just like in The Office, when Michael Scott tries to move on, and he has his the women of the office, he brings them into the conference room when he doesn't want to get back with Jan, and they say, right, you're so much happier now. And of course, he gives in, and he gets back with his ex-girlfriend, the crazy woman, Jan. Similar here. No, we've moved on. We had our relationship with Cam. In this case, the Panthers made the decision to end that relationship. Don't get back into that relationship. Move on. You're happy now with Sam Darnold. At least you should be. Move on, and let's see how that goes this year. I just think Cam's time as a starting quarterback is done because of, I think, all the injuries. He's not as mobile as he once was. The arms just kind of shot at this point with the injuries, and it's not so much the shoulder issues he's had, but the lower half. When your lower half's off, right, to step and drive and throw that football, you saw him last year. He started off, he had a couple of good games, but there was a couple of games last year where he had 100 yards passing. In fact, Josh Allen has had as many passing touchdowns in that stadium as Cam Newton did, and it was Cam Newton's home stadium. Josh Allen played one game there. There's a reason why the Patriots went with Mac Jones. So Cam Newton, I think a big part of it has been injuries, but he's just not the same quarterback he was a few years ago. I don't know if there's a starting job. Maybe the Texans, because they're desperate. Mark mentioned the Broncos, right? They're somewhat desperate. For Carolina, I'm good with Sam Darnold. We've been there, done that with Cam. Let's move forward with Sam. I think he has a higher ceiling than Cam does right now, certainly at this point in their careers. Coming up, we'll get to our Tuesday top 10. I could rank the top 10 quarterbacks after that conversation. That could be low-hanging fruit. But when we come back, we'll rank the 10 most important assistant coaches in college football this year. Some names you should maybe familiarize yourself with. And we'll do that next. Oh, here we go. On National South Carolina Day, playing music from musicians of the state. So who's this?
Billy Rufus. The Black River. Dave from Georgetown requested this.
Oh, okay. On the request line. You can always join the conversation or request a song. 843-721-9500. National South Carolina Day as we celebrate here on the Morrow Midday Show. We'll get to our Tuesday Top 10 coming up next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
I don't care who knows it. Black River, I'm in love with you.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
You'd hit
our Tuesday Top 10 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. It's National South Carolina Day, so we've been playing musicians from the state throughout the afternoon and will continue to do so. Who's this?
Firehouse from Myrtle Beach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, winners of the American Music Award, Best New Artist, I think, for 1990 or 91.
Oh, how about that?
Even though it might be a little out of the range for the city, I think this should be added in.
Yeah. Not a bad song.
Got some good power ballads, too, so.
Oh.
Get you on the dance floor with the ladies.
That's right. Everybody loves them power ballads. Appreciate the time last segment from Mark Schofield, who does a great job breaking down quarterbacks. If you missed that conversation, you can find it on demand, ESPN Radio, Charleston. Coming off of that, I could go many different ways with our Tuesday Top 10. You know, yesterday we ranked our rookie quarterbacks after the end of the preseason. And I agreed with Mark that Zach Wilson was the most impressive, but since he did not play in the third game, I bumped Trevor Lawrence to number one. And as I watched all these rookie quarterbacks throughout the preseason, I gave you this ranking yesterday, but I put Trey Lance number five at the back of the list because I think he's the biggest project of the bunch. He's still raw, and he's the one that features some mistakes, broken plays, some confusion, right? Bad sacks. Justin Fields I put at number four. I'm not as impressed as most people have been so far with Justin Fields. He starts very slow, gets better as the games go on, but that could just be because more talent is coming off of the field for the defense as these preseason games go along. And they made it real simple on him in his third game this past weekend with a lot of quick, short, easy throws. Justin Fields, to me, I put him number four because he's ahead of Trey Lance, but I still see him as somewhat of a project, which Mark somewhat alluded to last segment. Then I get to the top three that I think are a step above in class than those last two. And it begins with Mac Jones, was my number three quarterback. And there's a reason why he was named the starting quarterback today. A couple of reasons. But Mac Jones, as I watched all of these rookie quarterbacks, I think he looked the most polished. I think he looked the most ready to start. And I compared him to a Honda, which I drove. I used to drive an old Honda for 10 years. I put 200,000 miles on that thing, and it was just reliable. Was it the best-looking car in the parking lot? No. Did it have all the great gadgets like a backup camera and Bluetooth and Sirius X? No, it had none of that stuff. It was 10 years old at the time, and I got rid of it a couple of years ago. It was an old car. But it always got me where I was going. Never had to worry about it. It was reliable. My buddies had car problems. I never did, and it got me there. Looked good enough. Right, worked perfectly fine, and I never had to worry about it. Never had to worry about getting to work on time or going where I needed to go. That's Mac Jones. Right, he's not going to lose games for you. He's not going to embarrass you. He may not be making no-look throws like Patrick Mahomes. He may not be making big plays like Trevor Lawrence, but he'll keep you on schedule. He'll be steady. He won't turn it over. He'll keep the offense on track. He won't lose games for you. He's looked good. He's looked polished, especially for a rookie. And then Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence are my top two quarterbacks. Zach Wilson looked much better than I anticipated. Granted, the Jets made things very easy on him this preseason, as you should with a rookie. And Trevor Lawrence, for all the concern, he looked really good this past weekend. I end up putting him at number one. The offensive line will be a concern, but they got rid of that football faster this past weekend, which is what they're going to have to do. And as I said on the show yesterday, for all the talk about that bad offensive line, let's not ignore that Trevor Lawrence, playing behind that offensive line, still completed over 70% of his passes and didn't have a turnover all preseason. I compared it to working under a deadline and never making a mistake. Right, he's under pressure all the time. He's being sacked, he's running for his life, and he's still not making crucial mistakes. He's not turning the football over, he's completing most of his passes, he's still being accurate with the football. So Trevor Lawrence, I ended up putting number one in my rankings of the rookie quarterbacks this preseason. And instead of giving you some sort of top 10 ranking for quarterbacks this year, or quarterbacks with the most pressure, or breakout quarterbacks, any of that stuff, I figured for this week's Tuesday Top 10, as we do a top 10 list every Tuesday in the show, let's look at 10 assistant coaches in college football that will play a huge role. I originally started to put together a list of 10 coaches who could become head coaches after this season, and then by the end of the list, it kind of transitioned to just coaches who will play a big role in impacting this college football season. So, for our Tuesday Top 10, the 10 biggest, most important assistant coaches of the college football season.
Time for the Tuesday Top 10, where we rank anything from quarterbacks to cheeseburgers right here on the Morrow Midday Show. Interested?
No particular order. I kind of put them in an order, but again, as I continue to put this list together, this isn't necessarily a 1 through 10 list. It's just a list of 10 coaches, the 10 most important coordinators this college football season. Number one on my list, I start here in the state with Tony Elliott. We wait every year to see if he's going to take a job. This may be finally the time. He seemed to be inching, maybe slowly, but inching closer and closer to becoming a head coach at some point. Jeff Scott just left a couple of years ago. Now Tony Elliott has been able to run the offense on his own. For the most part, Brandon Schreeder is still involved, but it's Tony Elliott's offense. And we saw last year when Elliott was unavailable how different that offense looked. He obviously plays a huge role for this team that's trying to win another national championship, and if he wants a head coaching job, he can have it at the end of the year. Additionally, breaking in a new quarterback, breaking in a new running back, and if they still are one of the best offenses in the country, that's just another notch on the resume of Tony Elliott. That's just another thing for him to brag about. Hey, and you broke in another quarterback and had him look just as good as all the others. All right, we had a lot of moving pieces on offense this year, still a top offense in the country. It'd just be another thing for Tony Elliott to brag about. So I put Tony Elliott, he was the first one that came to mind when I was thinking of important coordinators this year for him and his work with DJ, and then also to see if he finally bolts from Clemson for a head coaching gig after this season. Number two on the list, Marcus Freeman. He's the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. Now, he's interesting because they just brought him in from Cincinnati. We know how good of a year Cincinnati had. They lost their defensive coordinator, and he shows up at Notre Dame where the defense has been pretty good the last couple years. Cincinnati also had a pretty good defense. Marcus Freeman is a big name. If he does well at Notre Dame, he'll become a head coach in the next year or two. But for Notre Dame, it's a big move to bring in this new defensive coordinator and to do so from Cincinnati. Some may see it as somewhat of a gamble, right? Going outside of the Power 5 to find your defensive coordinator. And when you talk about Notre Dame, those are always big jobs and big hires. Number three on the list, I put Alex Grinch, the defensive coordinator at Oklahoma. Oklahoma feels like they finally have that defense that can compete with the other top teams in the country. Whenever we think of the Big 12, we always think, oh, great offenses, terrible defenses. These teams can't play any defense. Well, Oklahoma believes this year they have the best defense in a while, and it will allow them to compete not only in the Big 12, but with some of these other teams in the country. They love their defensive line and may be the best in the Big 12, and it's led by this guy, Alex Grinch, who they went out and they got for a reason. All right, they brought in Grinch to try to help turn around this defense. And Grinch has had some interest for head coaching jobs in the past. So if he does a good job this year and brings some defense to Oklahoma, he'll probably get a head coaching job next year. But more than that, if he does a good job defensively, then maybe Oklahoma can become that national championship team this year with that missing piece. We'll get to the Big 12 coming up with our preview in just a little bit. But Oklahoma, we know the offense has never been the problem. They're waiting on that defense. Grinch will have to be the one to provide it. Number four on my list of most important coordinators this year in college football, Rhett Lashley at Miami. He's their offensive coordinator. They brought him back for his second year this year. Comes from the Gus Malzahn coaching tree. And he's important because, well, for Miami, you have De'Eriq King, who had a little bit of a down season a year ago when he first arrived in Miami. Now he knows the system a little bit more. But if we want to talk about Miami as a top 10 team, trying to beat UNC, maybe competing with Clemson in an ACC title game, I think it comes down to that offense, and the offense comes down to Rhett Lashley. And he's another big name to watch that if Miami has a good year, if De'Eriq King plays really well, if Miami's a top 10 team, they win the Coastal, he too could get a head coaching job. He's one of these young offensive coaches that, you know, everybody loves these days. Keep an eye on him and the role he'll play in the ACC. Number five on my list, Bill O'Brien, new offensive coordinator at Alabama. Let's see how this goes. I imagine we are going to see a lot, kind of like when Lane Kiffin was there, a lot of, what do they call them, chin wags between Bill O'Brien and Nick Saban. I think these two are going to butt heads all season long because they're both, Saban has no problem yelling at his coordinators and getting in their faces, and Bill O'Brien, if you have followed his career, right, you know he has no problem getting in the faces of many and standing up for himself and yelling at others and being stubborn and having arguments with his coaches or players. It's why some of the players didn't like him in Houston. I am interested in this dynamic between these two. But not only that, we know that Alabama, Nick Saban, it's like it's almost like some sort of rehab center that you go to, right? These coaches, they bottom out, they go to Alabama, Saban turns them around, and they get head coaching jobs afterwards. Steve Sarkisian was the latest one. Lane Kiffin before that. Even Mike Locksley got another head coaching job somehow at Maryland. Bill O'Brien now comes into Alabama. He's got plenty of pieces to work with. Let's see how he does running the Alabama offense. it's going to play a huge role with Alabama trying to win a national championship and starting a first-time quarterback. And if he does a good job, he'll get another chance out of it. Bill O'Brien will be back as a head coach somewhere. Number six on my list, Mike Elko, defensive coordinator at Texas A&M. Texas A&M may have the best defense in the SEC. And if they want to win the SEC and be a playoff team this year, it's going to take a win against Alabama. And if they want to beat Alabama and win the SEC, it's going to come from that talented defense led by Mike Elko. He's done a good job there with Jimbo Fisher running the defense. And if he does another good job this year, he's another name to watch. He's been brought up a lot about potential head coaches moving forward. And also, not only becoming a potential head coach, but playing a big role in trying to decide the SEC. For A&M, it could come down to their defense. They have a new quarterback. Right? They've had a quarterback battle this summer. They have to replace Kellen Mond. So they need to make sure the defense is up to stuff. Number seven on the list, Barry Odom, defensive coordinator at Arkansas. Now, I thought of him for a couple of reasons. Number one, people are really after Odom. They tried to hire him away from Arkansas. Arkansas had to give him a raise after his first year. He did a good job last year, as did Sam Pittman, and Arkansas was a big surprise. Odom's been a head coach in the SEC before. If he does another good job at Arkansas, he could be a head coach once again. But more than that, Arkansas, with the impressive job they did last year, they were led by Odom's defense. This year, is Arkansas going to compete for the SEC? No. But they do play the toughest schedule in the country. They go up against some of the most important teams in college football. And if Odom and that defense can make things difficult, who knows? Maybe Arkansas steals a game here or there. Maybe they win a surprise game. They upset a team, maybe just once, and it disrupts the SEC or college football. And if they do, it'll be because of Barry Odom and his defense. He was somebody that, when we were talking about names for the Gamecocks, let's see if they could find a way to pry him away from Arkansas. Arkansas had to give him a raise so that he wouldn't leave. People are really excited about Barry Odom and the job he's done there. Number eight on the list, Graham Harrell, offensive coordinator at USC. Let's go out west. Harrell is a former quarterback, had a good career, young guy, offensive guy, has done a good job in a short time at USC. He's working with Slovis, the best quarterback in the Pac-12, and USC has high hopes. Some believe they can win the Pac-12 this year. It's going to come down to the offense and the play calling of Graham Harrell. And he fits that mold of young, impressive, offensive guy. If he does a good job, if Slovis is maybe in the Heisman conversation, Harrell could be that next young coach hired as a head coach, or maybe he moves up to the NFL. And if he does well this year, so too will USC. We've been waiting for them to come around and come back. Number nine on the list, Derek Mason. Obviously, did not work at Vanderbilt, but a good defensive coordinator. He was another one of those names that was being discussed on the wish list for the Gamecocks as their defensive coordinator. He winds up at Auburn with Brian Harsin, first-year coach. Now, I believe, and I share it often on the show, in the Peter principle. Derek Mason, I think, is a product of that. Very good defensive coordinator, just not a good head coach, or at least did not take the right job at Vanderbilt. Few can win there. But Mason is a good defensive coordinator, so he comes into Auburn and is going to try to help with that defense, and they play the Gamecocks this year, and of course they play some big teams, and they're trying to pick up where Malzahn left off with Brian Harsin coming in. Derek Mason will do a good job this year as a defensive coordinator, and I'm sure he'll get another chance, much like a Muschamp, right? Even though Mason was a bit of a disaster, or put more appropriately, Vanderbilt was a disaster, I'm sure if Mason does a good job at Auburn, he'll get another opportunity. He's a good defensive coordinator. And lastly, number 10 on my list of the most important coordinators in college football this year. Most of these guys, if they do a good job this year, they'll be up for a head coaching job in the offseason. Most of these guys, if they do a good job this year, they will influence the college football season. Number 10, I'm going to say defensive coordinator Jay Bateman from UNC. Because for UNC, their season comes down to their matchup against Miami and De'Ara King. And if all goes well, the ACC championship against Clemson. This is year three of this coaching staff at UNC. They were very excited that they got Jay Bateman to come run that defense. The defense hasn't been quite as good as they would like to this point, but it's year three. They have plenty of talent, and they also have the quarterback on offense, Sam Howell. He scores plenty of points. Now they need that defense to get to that point. Bateman came in from Army. He did a pretty good job there. They need him and that defense to really take a step forward for UNC this year if they want to get where they hope to go, if they want to compete with Miami and with Clemson. So Jay Bateman is on that list for the 10 most important coordinators in college football this year. A lot of them in the SEC, all out of the Power Five, and all guys that, if they do a good job, will have a big impact on college football this year and will probably lead to them getting some sort of head coaching job elsewhere at the end of the year, if interested, beginning with Tony Elliott. When we come back, we've been continuing our previews of the Power 5 conferences in college football this year. When we come back, we'll take a look at the Big 12. I was just talking about Oklahoma. Is this the final year of the Big 12 as we know it? And is Oklahoma a true national championship contender coming out of that conference? We'll take a look at the Big 12 when we come back. But it's National South Carolina Day. So we've been playing music all afternoon from musicians from the state. This song sounds familiar. Who is this?
The Swingin' Medallions.
Oh, yeah.
From Greenwood. Yeah, double shot of my baby's love.
Yes, we have heard this one before. This is a good song, too. Happy National South Carolina Day. Big 12 preview coming up next here on the Moore Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Take a look at the Big 12 as we preview the Power 5 conferences ahead of week one of the college football season. The Moore Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Happy National South Carolina Day. We've been playing music from bands from the state throughout the day. Who do we have here?
This is Jackal from Anderson.
Oh. At least I know this band.
Of course, they also had that sort of novelty rock song, The Lumberjack, where they used a chainsaw as an instrument.
Oh. Happy National South Carolina Day. South Carolina became a state in March. I mean, way back, not this March, obviously. I don't know why today. What's the significance of August 31st for this state? Is it just a random? Did we just pick random days to celebrate each state? Feels that way. Like, I grew up a Red Sox fan, same idea. Like, today would be Vermont Day at Fenway Park. And then the next month, this is Connecticut Day. And yeah, I don't know how you choose. But it's National South Carolina Day, so celebrate accordingly. And we will continue to do so with musical acts from the state. We'll get to our Big 12 preview in just a moment. But you can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. Let's go to the phone. Super Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
All right, hats off to Brady, who started, in a preseason game and won his preseason game.
Yes.
So
credit
Brady's
to Tom Brady
be
for
a force.
Yeah. I mean, credit to Tom Brady for going out there and doing his job. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. He deserves a quite the ovation. He actually went out there and did what he was supposed to. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a force to be reckoned with. And we got a big football next weekend because – next Thursday's opening day with the NFL, I think, on the 9th.
Oh, who's playing in that game?
Everybody, I think, would be.
Everyone's playing in that game? They're going to have all the teams out there at once? It's going to be like a jamboree?
Well, no, I think it's all going to be all weekend, you know. But it's going to be a lot of football between that, college football, Saturday, Carolina. They'll win that game. No big problem with that. But Clemson and Georgia is going to be the big game of the weekend.
Now, which game are you going to watch? Are you going to watch the South Carolina game or are you going to watch the Clemson game?
Well, I don't have the internet, so I won't have to be able to. I'll just have to tune in on the following week. But if it's on the SEC Network, maybe I can.
Yeah, I know. I believe it's the SEC Network Plus, so I don't think it is on regular
TV. Oh, well. I'll just catch the game on the 11th, you know?
Yeah, we'll wait until they take
anyway,
on East Carolina.
But anyway, I'll get the scores and highlights and all that from Scotty. So it'll be all right.
Let's say that the South Carolina-Eastern Illinois game was on TV. All right, let's say it's on TV next Saturday. Would you rather watch that game or the movie The Searchers?
I'd rather watch the movie The Searchers. Would John Wayne, you can't beat that.
No, you can't, absolutely. Would you rather watch the Gamecocks game against Eastern Illinois, or would you rather watch Once Upon a Time in the West?
Once Upon a Time in the West, you can't go wrong with Charles Bronson.
No, you sure can't. That's what I've been saying that for years. Would you rather watch the Gamecocks against Eastern Illinois or the movie Red River?
Red River with John Wayne and Walter Brennan.
Yes. Would you rather watch South Carolina and Eastern Illinois or Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid?
Oh, Butch Cassidy, Robert Redford.
Yeah, you watching that? Of course.
Oh, when Paul Newman on, and Robert
Redford. You got to watch that movie. You can't skip that one. Would you rather watch South Carolina and Eastern Illinois or The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
The Good, Bad, and Ugly with Clint Eastwood and I can't remember the name of the bad guy, the bounty hunter on them. But his name was Douglas Mortimer.
Ah.
It was a part.
Yes.
Yeah, he was a bad dude there on Spaghetti Western. You can't go wrong with that
one. No, you can't. Douglas Glattimore is more interesting than Zeb Nolan. I'd rather be watching him, let me tell you. Would you rather watch South Carolina and Eastern Illinois next week or Johnny Guitar?
South Carolina, Eastern Illinois.
Oh, you're going, okay, so that's where you draw the line. So all those other Westerns you're watching, but if Johnny Guitar comes on, you're switching over to the Gamecock game.
Of course, keep up with what's going on, yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right. So sorry, Johnny Guitar. Sorry, Nicholas Ray and Joan Crawford. We're not interested in your movie, Johnny Guitar. We want to watch the Gamecocks stomp Eastern Illinois next Saturday. This Saturday, actually. As we preview the Big 12, let's run through some of these teams here before the top of the hour. We've been running through our Power 5 conferences this week. I'm picking Oklahoma to win the Big 12. Not much of a surprise there. I've been going chalk at the top of these conferences. We'll get to the SEC tomorrow. But for Oklahoma, they're led by Spencer Rattler, right? Best quarterback, many believe, best quarterback in the country. Heisman favorite, will be the number one pick next year. Additionally, they have the best offensive line in the conference. They have the best wide receiving group, so they have a lot of help around them. Now, last year, Oklahoma scored over 30 points in their losses. Offense is never the problem, so it's about the defense. But the belief is their defense is going to be the best in years this season and finally ready to compete with the top teams at Oklahoma. They have a really good defensive line. Plus, they get TCU and Iowa State at home, and that game November 20th in the penultimate week against Iowa State could decide the Big 12, and you get them at home. At least could decide the Big 12 regular season. That'll be an interesting game. Because I believe those are the two best teams in the Big 12 this year. I put Iowa State at number two. They get 11 starters back on offense. They have a veteran quarterback. They have a good running back. They have 20 returning starters total. And they have a good coach in Matt Campbell, who, by the way, may be in his final year at Iowa State. He's turned down the NFL for Iowa State, but right now the Big 12 is on the eve of becoming a Group of Five conference. I don't know if Matt Campbell would want to stick around for that. So maybe one last hurrah, a big run this year, and then go get a bigger job. If ever you need more motivation, he could have it. Iowa State is returning their top six running backs, top 10 wide receivers, top 22 tacklers. They only lost 11 players from last year's team. Now, my concerns with Iowa State, they have never won over 10 games in a season. They haven't won a conference since 1912. So they're trying to achieve things they have not done in at least 100 years. We just haven't seen them do it before. And number two, my other concern, their season may come down to that game against Oklahoma. They have to go on the road to play Oklahoma. Not only that, but they play Iowa week two this year. Matt Campbell has never beaten Iowa. So that's another tough one. And Iowa State, they play really well in October, but they're under 500 under Matt Campbell in September. Remember last year they got blown out by Louisiana to begin the year. So they could lose to Iowa. They could lose to Oklahoma. They may slip up another game in the Pac-12, have three losses, and not be the playoff team many expect. I put TCU finishing third in the Big 12. Great coach, good defense, could be the best defense in the conference. They have the most returning starters in the conference as well. Plus a veteran quarterback that's coming back. Their top four wide receivers are coming back. Top nine rushers from a year ago are coming back. And they finished last year strong. They won five of their last six games a season ago, and they're bringing back most of those guys. So I think they pick up where they left off a year ago and finish in third in the Big 12. Then I put Texas fourth. They lost some close games last year, may have had a better team than their record indicated. But now you go through some changes. New head coach, a new quarterback. You lose Sam Ehlinger. We'll see how Steve Sarkisian does. I imagine there'll be plenty of talent and points on offense. If that quarterback works out, they could be dynamic and score a lot of points because there's a lot of good pieces still left on offense, and Sark knows offense. Texas will probably score some points, but I think they still go through some growing pains, so I put them at fourth. I put Oklahoma State at fifth. They're one of the most experienced teams, or were one of the most experienced teams in the country a year ago, but this year they have the fewest returning starters in the conference. And they lost Chuba Hubbard and their top two wide receivers, their playmakers. I put Oklahoma State at number five. I think they take a step back. Number six, I put West Virginia in sixth place. It's year three of Neil Brown. Year three is the big year for coaches. That's usually where they take a big step forward. He has the most talented roster he's had since getting to West Virginia. I put West Virginia at six. They could potentially make some noise in the Big 12. Texas Tech, I put at seventh. They have not had, I don't know if we realize this, I did not until I looked it up. Texas Tech has not had a winning season in the conference in a decade. Now, earlier this offseason, I predicted that their head coach, Matt Wells, would be the coach in college football this year that takes advantage of another chance. We had a story from Dabo who said he thought he was going to get fired. I think it was his second year on the job, whenever it was. He got called into the office of the AD. He thought he was out. Obviously, Clemson, boy, are they thankful that they let him hang around. Boy, are they thankful they were patient. I think Matt Wells, he's not going to get Texas Tech to the level of Clemson, but I think he could turn around this program, have some success, and be that guy that, boy, you know, we're thankful we didn't pull the trigger early. We're thankful we had some patience with this guy. They had a lot of close losses a year ago. I think Texas Tech will be better, but they do have to break in a new quarterback this year. That would be the concern. But I do think Matt Wells is a good coach. I put Texas Tech still in seventh place in the Big 12. And then things finish up with Kansas State, Baylor, and Kansas in that order. Kansas State, they started 4-1 last year before their quarterback got injured. And they also had to replace the entire offensive line last year. This year, the entire offensive line's back, quarterback's back, the entire offense is back. They got a good coach in Chris Klieman. Kansas State, I probably should have put them a little bit higher, but I do like Texas Tech. I do like West Virginia this year. Kansas State, when they were healthy last year, got off to a really good start. If they're healthy this year, they could be a little bit of a surprise team in the Big 12. I then put Baylor ninth. They had a new head coach come in during the pandemic last year. That's difficult. This year they get 17 starters back, including their entire defense, for a defensive head coach. But they do have a new quarterback this year and lost a lot of pieces in the last 2 years after Matt Rhule left. I think Baylor will be improved, but still not a good team. They're ninth. And last, of course, is Kansas. They have not won more than one conference game since 2008. And they have a new coaching staff now that they had to bring in the spring because of the issues with Les Miles, so they were behind the eight ball even more than usual. This is by far the least talented team in the conference. They had no all-conference players a year ago. And Kansas has lost 13 straight games, 12 by double digits. This year they play South Dakota, Coastal Carolina, and Duke in the non-conference and probably will lose to all three. Kansas will be terrible once again. I think it does come down to Oklahoma and Iowa State in the Big 12, and I'll take Oklahoma to win the conference. There's our Big 12 breakdown ahead of week one. We've been playing music throughout the day that relates to South Carolina. What do we have here?
What do you mean, what do we have here? Chubby Checker.
He's from South Carolina?
Yes, he's from Andrews in Georgetown County.
I didn't know that. I thought this was some sort of cover or something. I never knew he was from this state. A lot of talented musicians from around here. Hour three coming up next. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio. Twist it, twist it, twist it, till we tear the house down.